Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome back. Buffalo Pro Shop is the brand new online store of the Sabres and the Bandits. You can visit BuffaloProShop.com right now to shop exciting team gear and unique styles as the Sabres are now deep into this playoff series with the Boston Bruins. Game 3 happening tomorrow at the Garden in Boston. Of course, ESPN is the exclusive home to the Stanley Cup Final this June, and longtime studio host and play-by-play man Steve Levy joins us here on the show. Steve, it's great to welcome you into Sabres Live. How are you?
Hey guys, good to see you. Real pleasure.
Do people ask you about NHL Tonight from back in the days? Like, that was my jam. I was in the AHL. We'd get to Adirondack on a Thursday night, and boom, ESPN2, NHL Tonight. Like, that was... So do people talk to you about that all the time?
It still comes up. You know, I only really filled in. That was more Butch Egross and Bill Pito back in the day. Mm-hmm. But I think Ferraro cut his broadcasting teeth, yes, sort of on that show. Ray might have even still been playing and surfed, yep, in when he wasn't in the postseason. But and the music has stayed the same. It's still the same, yep, music, which people love. They love our hockey music. So, yeah, people still talk about it. It's a great show. Honestly, like, I don't know why we're not still doing it, especially on playoff nights. Like Arda does In the Crease, which is somewhat similar. Yeah. On the app and everything. But it was a great show. Hockey fans just loved it. Yeah.
Steve, what was your first year at ESPN?
1993.
93. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but so in 94 you started doing CFL football?
No.
No? Little
no,
later?
I have never done a CFL football game.
No?
Canadian Football League? No.
Really? No. What else have you done?
Because you've done a lot of things at ESPN, many sports.
Yeah, I've done play-by-play of every pro sport. Except I've not done an NBA game. I would 33 no? years. Can I get one bad ESPN West Coast, you know, Sacramento Kings something on the deuce at 2 a.m? I just want to do one. I'll even do it on ESPN Radio. I would like to say I have done the majors kind of thing. So amazing. I've done like 5 MLB games. I had 3 years of Monday Night, which was, you know, football, which is obviously unbelievable. I've done the college football. I got to do games at LSU and Clemson and Michigan and see all that. And obviously hockey. So I've got to do a lot. I'm still trying to get one NBA game to complete my cycle there.
Wonder if you got some alumni friends at Oswego that can get something hooked up for you, because people don't realize, like, you know, like they think ESPN and you've been there for over 30 years. But before that, I mean, you went through college just like everybody else. And the list of alumni at Oswego is pretty extensive. I mean, Linda Cohn was there. Obviously, Linda was always great with the hockey, a Ranger fan. Yeah. But, you know, there's been a lot of people. So what was your time at Oswego like?
Al Roker.
Al Roker, okay. Yep.
And Jerry Seinfeld, hidden fact, Jerry for 1 year, might have gotten too cold for him. I think he went to Queens College after that. But Oswego was great, man. It was, honestly, the true story is my folks were not going to pay to send me to Syracuse like every other broadcasting kid in the country wanted to go there. My grades were not, I hope my kids aren't watching now, my grades are probably not what they should have been coming out of high school. So my folks were like, hey, let's go to Oswego. I'll give it. It was $2,000 a year. It was, and that's how long ago. $2,000 a year. That's all in. That's room and board too, right? And I had the best time ever. I am still still close with all my college roommates, and we speak every day. And 3 of them are true blue Buffalo guys. So I've got a real Buffalo vibe in my life. You know, one guy's a firefighter in South Buffalo. Guy's a coach and teacher in, I don't know, Kenmore East or Kenmore West or one of the Kenmores. And another guy grew up in Hamburg and lives there still to this day. So I've got big ties to the Buffalo community, but I loved my time at Oswego because not everybody wanted to be a sportscaster. Like, I got to do it as a freshman, radio, TV, write for the newspaper. You know, and at Syracuse, it was thought to be, you had to be a senior because everybody wanted to do it. It's such a log jam to get on all the equipment and be on all the shows. So I really benefited, and obviously things have worked out really well. And my parents still laughed their ass off. at $2,000 a year. What a deal. What a
yeah, I think it was, I was very similar. I went to basically the equivalent of a community college in Calgary. I've seen receipts for like $500 for a semester and things like that. Yeah. Like it's absolutely crazy. And same thing with you, Steve. Like nobody in my program, which was small, wanted to do sports at the time. So you just kept getting reps and reps and reps. It was awesome. It's great.
That's the way to do it. But now do you go back to Oswego a few times? Because isn't there like sandwiches and specials and restaurants locally? Like you're a legend in Oswego.
That's a small place, first of all, so that helps. It's much easier to be a legend than a small place than a big place. I get back whenever I can. I do try to pay back because I honestly, you know, I got a scholarship fund there and all that kind of thing, and most people do and try to give back. I honestly believe that Oswego, oh, that'd be a bad mistake.
Yeah.
You need to get that out in post-production.
Yes.
For a lot of requests. Oswego is a reason, a big factor into my success, whatever success I had. And again, because it was the 4 years of practical experience, you know, while nobody could listen except my buddies. We were on a radio station. We used to call it Power Static. Like nobody could get the signal. But I didn't care. I was doing a sports talk show and calling hockey games and nobody could hear it. But I was getting my mistakes out of the way when nobody could hear it. And so I give a lot of credit to Oswego for that development, and so I do try to give back to the program and visit whenever I can, and a powerhouse D3 hockey program by Ed Gosek. Back in the day, Plattsburgh, Oswego, that was wars. It was Islanders, Rangers, it was Canadians, Nordiques. It was as good as any rivalry in the NHL. Wars. Going into Plattsburgh, going into Oswego, and it was just, you know, outside of having my kids, it was probably the best 4 years of my life. And my life's been pretty good, so that's saying something.
With Geneseo now, it's a big rivalry as well. Yeah. But, okay, tell me about the Bridge Street Run. Like, what is that in Oswego? Because we were told, research has told us that is a talking point.
So apparently, and I'm not sure of this, there are more bars per square capita, if you will, in Oswego than, you know, anywhere on the planet or something like that. And so the Bridge Street Run, Bridge Street is the main street in town, if you will, and you would take the bus to the edge of town, the furthest bar away from campus, and have to have one beer at each bar on your way back to campus. And you would sign a T-shirt at each bar, the same T-shirt, to see how your penmanship got worse as you had a beer at each place. And so, yeah, the Bridge Street Run. Now I drink, you know, 2.5 beers, and I got to have a light beer, and then I'm full, you know. So life has very much changed for me.
Mixing the water.
So all these reasonably local connections, why you picked the Sabres to win the Cup?
No, it's not the reason. The reason is, I think it's a fair sample size from the regular season. They weren't hot for 3 weeks. They were hot for 3.5 months. Mm-hmm. And in a conference like the East, which is really wide open, I thought, where anybody could win if you got into the playoffs, I thought there was a fair pick to take Buffalo. And then my thinking out West is, as dominant and superior as those, especially the three teams in the Central, that they're going to kick the crap out of each other, and who knows what they're going to have left by the time any of those teams get to the Western Conference Final and into the Cup Final. So the Buffalo pick is not looking that great now after the first two games. I haven't liked the Sabres game. You know, obviously they win game one, but they weren't the better team the majority of the night. And so I think, you know, Buffalo can take some stock in the fact that they probably could be down 2-0 instead of 1-1. And really going on the road, this might actually help the Sabres. I mean, I feel like the story, I called them America's team the other night, the Buffalo Sabres. I mean, there's so much hype around the Sabres and the enthusiasm and the excitement. What's going on outside the building? What's going on around building? You know, everywhere other than on the actual ice surface in the rink, that maybe getting on the road can actually help the team a little bit.
Usually, studio people that broadcast the NHL final pick great destination, like the South, like California, because they want to go on the road to those cities. So you pick Buffalo. Is that because you want to reuse that beer saber you got in studio the other day and be able to drink it with the fans?
Yeah, that'd be one. Listen, so I've been to, 33 years, I think I've been to every single Stanley Cup except the bubble. They didn't let us go into the bubble. Mm-hmm. And we missed one, you know, obviously the lockout. The 99 series was among the highlights of my career. Nobody had a better time on Chippewa Street than Barry Melrose and myself. And so going back and forth with Dallas and Buffalo, and those games were unbelievable. And listen, I want to go where people care. That's like my criteria. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say where I don't want to go, but yeah, it's nice to have fun and have a good city and all that stuff. But I want to go where people are passionate about it. And there's no place they're more passionate about it than Buffalo. And Buffalo would be a great time. It's a great city. I do ESPN Radio NFL games. I can't wait to go and get a Bills game up there. And yeah, it's cool to see my buddies, my college buddies up there. But I love the city. I've always had a soft spot in my heart for really all of Western New York. And I root for the teams, for sure.
So we're still in the first week here of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Who else has emerged for you right now as just a terrific story?
Philadelphia, it's got to be the yeah. Flyers. And that goes into what we were just talking about, the wide open Eastern Conference, anybody can win. Listen, I can't believe how bad Pittsburgh looks, but while saying that, we have to give credit to Philadelphia. I mean, that's the Flyers are doing this. And I'm amazed year after year, and I should stop being amazed because it happens every year now, that a kid comes fresh out of college and has an impact on the Stanley Cup playoffs. And what Porter Martone is doing, injection of some new blood in that room. Tak obviously knows what he's doing. Vladar, I never saw this coming from Dan Vladar. And they have, I think Biz said it the other night, and yes, we watched the other networks too, but it was a great expression. Biz said, because I wish I thought of it on my own, and he came up with it first, it looks like the Flyers put a wet blanket over the Penguins in the neutral zone. They, you know, Sid and Gino, they can't get anything going. Their passes are just off. Everything's just off for Pittsburgh, and I think they're in some trouble here.
So Pittsburgh's down 2-0, 2-0 to Philly. Carolina's up 2-0 on Ottawa, and Colorado's up 2-0 on LA. Of those three series, this or that or the other thing, which one, LA, Ottawa, or Pittsburgh, have a chance to win the series?
I would say Ottawa of those three options. I think they've been really close. They have been right there. Look, the Kings play hard. The Kings try hard. But you can see, even in last night's game, there's not going to be enough offense. They're not going to score enough. And at one point, Colorado's going to get six. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The fact that Colorado's winning with two goals a game now, and not even their big boys are, you know, we haven't seen McCarr and McKinnon light it up. So you know that's coming. And that has to be disheartening for L.A., that they're right there. And they've held the other guys, top players in the league down, and they still can't win. So I feel a lot better about the Kings if they had Kevin Fiala. What a loss that is. That would have changed this entire series, in my opinion, because I do think Colorado has some flaws. I'm surprised they're the super overwhelming favorite to win the Cup, but they are. And so I would say of those three, Ottawa has the best chance. I think the schedule helps the Senators, too. There's 2 days off between games 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. So that's a killer loss they suffered the other night in Raleigh, but they'll have two days off to regroup sort of at home and get her going. But they too, they got to find some offense. They've got to score. You know, a power play goal once in a while would be nice, as you and Buffalo know. Power play goal once in a while.
Just once in a while.
Can we sneak in a power play goal in the month of April, maybe?
Yes, you know? Thank you. April is the month, indeed. We like to, thanks to our producer, Sam, revisit old tweets.
Oh.
And one of the first ones that we found of note from you pertained to Alex Ovechkin missing a flight to the 2011 All-Star Game. You were basically reporting this as news that the Capitals All-Stars, Ovechkin and Green, are going to be late getting to Raleigh. They missed their flight. Now, I'm intrigued by this because you went to high school on Long Island with Adam Schefter. Is that right? So is this like where your insidery status, your news tweets kind of came from?
So no, I'd like to give Sheffy some credit there, but no, I don't remember even tweeting that. It's a long time ago. Why would I have that information? Somebody must have leaked that to me. I have no recollection, and I'm not even sure it's true, by the way, quite frankly. And it's a good reminder to go back and scrub all of my social media. Who knows what else is up there? But in my high school, I did go. So Shefty and I went into the Hall of Fame together in our high school, which would be the only Hall of Fame I ever go into. Doug Ellen, the creator of Entourage. You guys like the series Entourage, right?
Wow.
He was in my high school, too. Yep. Kenny Dichter, Wheels Up, genius, who invented the whole Wheels Up thing. So the four of us all had a night together at the Belmore JFK.
Amazing. Steve, fantastic. Just overview of your whole career, which we continue to love every night on ESPN. Thank you for the time today.
You guys are so kind to me. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on. And really, I hope to see you in a month from now or so, if not sooner, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. ESPN Steve Levy. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
Here comes Arvidsson, takes the puck at center. Lyon in the blue paint for now. Arvidsson to the circle in his right. Lyon tracks him and makes the stop. Alex Lyon coming up large with 10-10 to go on a penalty shot stop here in the second period to hold it at 1-0.
Okay, we agree on that, right? That that was a save, at least. Didn't I see wide somewhere? And then it was like they... I don't know. I think what happened, maybe why we are not on the same page here, is because we did watch the game on different feeds.
He got it with the blocker.
Got it with the blocker.
I think if Arvidsson had tried to miss the blocker, it was going wide. Like, it was just a perfectly played shot by Lyon.
TNT has angles of the other two, the two Sabre goals. I mean, maybe the third one too, but Byram and Tuck from pretty much ice level. It's a great shot. And you just showed me the MSG replays of the Byram goal, and they don't have that. So I want to find that and see if you see it the way I did.
I definitely see a player cruising through that makes an effort either with his stick but also with his feet. And I can't tell if he gets it or not, but Swayman snaps his head around to look at that guy, 44, whoever that is on Boston. He just it has the look of like, either you tip that past me or you screwed up my view, because there's a Ryan Miller dude there when the goal goes in. The Tuck one, Mittelstadt's stick is there, but I think he misses it. I think the blade of his stick, Tuck gets it underneath that, and so I don't think he got his stick on that one.
I don't know.
But I went back and looked.
It's end over end, the shot. Tuck. Like, he couldn't have shot it like that without a tip. We'll find it. I might be wrong. But that's what I watched, what I thought watching the game last night. Sam Panayotovich with us now, Chicken Dinner Podcast in Boston.
We're fighting, Sam.
We're fighting, and we're maybe, I'm not sure, we'll be fighting with you. But, you know, you are now a Boston guy. So 2-1 Sabres after three games. Are you into it at all? I mean, we've known each other a while here, but, you know, hockey's not your number one.
I've got Sabres to win the series, so I'm excited. I feel good. Current math says there's about a 77% chance the Sabres win the series. Now, these games aren't played on calculators, but series price -315, -330. So Sabres in a good spot, and I'll tell you what, here's how sick I am, and you guys know this because I've done this many times since we've got to know each other. Like, I went to the Notre Dame-Penn State game. I went to the Penn State bar when I had Notre Dame. I'm thinking about going to a bar on Sunday across from the Garden, not wearing Sabres gear, but rooting Sabres hard in a Boston bar game four.
Yeah, we like that about you. I like that about you.
Right.
The nerve, right? Just the willingness and just sort of getting some sort of sick pleasure out of it. That's I respect all of that. Well, -315 seems pretty serious. I mean, it's 2-1. Games have been really close. They could have, you know, each team could have won all of them, I guess. But I like the sound of that number, Sam. -315 to win the series at this point. Good. Great.
I wouldn't lay it. I wouldn't lay $3 in a hockey series. And these are very, very fluid and very twitchy markets. So let's just play this forward. If Buffalo wins game four, that goes to -1400, you know?
Yep.
If Boston evens it up, we're talking about -110 each way. So that's just the way the cookie crumbles. I don't want to say that game four is this uber important game, but you got a chance to pretty much finish them off in their building. It's really going to take, like, I think the game four market to pay attention to is the number on Swayman's saves. I don't think they have that up yet because the game is obviously a couple days away. But he's going to have to win that game in the net. Like, he's going to have one of those, like, 94% save chances because I do think this Buffalo team can sort of smell it right now. And, I think it's obviously their series to lose, but I'm pulling for the boys and everybody listening for sure.
All right. This has no impact on our Lindy Ruff Coach of the Year bet, but the final standings hopefully do. I mean, I said all along, if they get first place, I think we're home free on our bet. Are the odds for that stuff still up? The voting has happened. It's all regular season stuff, so the playoffs have no impact on any of the NHL awards. We won't know the results for a while here until I think the playoffs are over is when they announce all that stuff. But are the numbers still up, and are we still sitting like at minus 3,000 or something?
Quick check right now at DraftKings, FanDuel, BetMGM. The only awards we can bet on, Conn Smythe, I guess the only award,
okay,
singular. That's it.
That's
so,
the playoffs.
Everything's off the board. Yeah.
Everything else has been voted on then. That's why. Yeah, it's closed up.
Yeah, last check we had Lindy minus 2,500. Well, not we had. We had 7-1 plus 700.
Right.
But the market.
Right.
Yeah, the market was minus 2,500. And now that it's been voted, I mean, that's like the definition of insider trading. Like, people have literally cast their ballots. So you can't take legal bets on it when the votes have been submitted.
Want to talk, Conn Smythe? Bulldog, have you thought about it?
I have not at all thought about it yet. It's so early in the playoffs. I haven't thought. Like, I know McDavid isn't scoring like crazy for Edmonton.
But scored at all,
right? But they've only played the two games.
That might make him a good idea.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
I mean,
what does that market look like, Sam? Who are the favorites right now?
You've got two Avalanche right on top. McKinnon is 6-1, and then it's Cale Makar, about 10-1. And obviously, shop around. So 10-1 at DraftKings, 17-1 at FanDuel. Same bet.
Wow.
Wink, wink.
Yep.
Right? And he won it the last time Colorado won. Makar won it. So before the playoffs, I made two bets in the market. I took McKinnon. He was about 9 or 10-1. And then I bet Ottinger. Now, Dallas, as Mike and I talked last week about the West being kind of wide open, if you want to get past the Avalanche, I think there's a handful of teams that could make a run, but I think he's about to lock in and they're going to finish off the Wild, and then at that point you see what happens. I like goalies.
I like that bet because if they can upset Colorado in round two, provided they get through Minnesota, then he'll get a ton of credit. I think, especially because of all the drama that happened with him and his coach last year in the playoffs. I think he'll be a good pick if they clear Colorado, is all I'm saying.
I don't know how they win a Stanley Cup unless he's their best player. I mean, they've got seriously some big weapons up there, but he's got to be the guy. And I'm looking right now, FanDuel isn't even offering Ottinger. That's sort of strange. DraftKings has 50-1. Oh, there's Ottinger, 80-1 at FanDuel. If this is ever a conversation to get the best of the number, I mean, the Conn Smythe market is your perfect elixir of the, like, that. All that means, though, Bulldog, is that DraftKings is taking more bets on him. And FanDuel is willing to, you know, sort of balance the checkbook a bit. But a $100 bet makes you $5,000 at one place and $8,000 in another. It's crazy that people don't get the best of the number.
We can't bet it. This is another one where not in New York. I'll throw out a name. Quinn Hughes. From what I've read from Travis, I haven't seen maybe any of that series yet, but like he is a huge difference maker on the ice or not. And he had kind of a blunder in the last game, but still, like, it's a much different series when he's on the ice versus when he's not.
And
it's still pretty close.
And the same thing holds there. Like, if they can come back and beat Dallas and then beat Colorado, he'd be the guy. Like, what's his number?
I think so too.
Yeah, that's a good poll. You got a number on
him? Plus, he's famous already.
Yeah,
I do have a number. I also love that I'm talking about how much I love Dallas, and Mike goes, "Here's a Wild player to win the Conn Smythe."
I know. Sorry.
Thank you, Mike. Let's see.
I'm just warming you up for Sunday when you go to that bar.
Now I'm going to be a Bruins fan Sunday and go against everything I said. Let's see. Quinn Hughes, I see 60. I see 80. I see 100 to win the Conn Smythe.
See, it's different. It doesn't really need to be explained, probably, but it's different from the Super Bowl MVP bets that we made because this is the whole playoffs,
right?
Versus one game. And I like that. It's sort of it's a fun one to play with.
I would get lost in there. If we could wager on that on our phones,
you would?
I'd be in there.
What's Noah Oslin?
With like three or four different guys, probably.
Just... What's Noah Oslin to win the Conn Smythe Trophy?
If you spell Oslin, I'll tell you.
It's never going to be there. Ostlund. It's never going to be there, right? Who would be the top saber? Thompson.
Ostlund. Okay.
There's no way he's listed. No.
He's not listed.
Fun idea.
He made his playoff debut last night. Goal, empty net goal and an assist on the first goal for Buffalo.
Good start.
Yeah. Real nice.
Sam, what else are you into?
Well, I'll tell you what. The draft was interesting last night. And as I often do, I listened to the opening of the show and you guys were talking about how, you know, ESPN's like, the 8th pick is on the clock. And then the Twitter's like, with the 11th pick, Miami selects blank. You know, you're like, okay. Kelce was taking live bets. Now, they weren't like extremely live, like second to second. But when ESPN was on like the 4th pick, you could bet the 5th and the 6th and the 7th pick. And Kelce waved the white flag after like the first 10 picks.
Really?
Yeah, because the insiders, I mean, if you were following like Albert Breer, and there was one other guy, maybe Josh Norris or one of the Schwartzes. I can't remember exactly who it was, but Albert Breer was doing this live show. And because he's not working on the ESPN broadcast or the NFL Network broadcast, he doesn't have to like hold back. He can do his thing. And he was kind of showing like, hey, I still got it. So if you were just getting notifications from, you know, Breer's guys or from the other accounts, like you knew who was going. Again, Kelce is working at the same speed as everybody else, you know? Like, you can't really, like, bot that. It's not a technological thing. You just kind of have to be quick to pull the market off. But, yeah, it was wild because they took – I think they said they took, like – I should have the exact number. I want to say it was, like, $60 million on live bets last night on the draft. Yeah, and I don't know how they won, but – that's how you get people in the door, right? Because they'll get it back. I mean, people are going to dump it right back. But that was interesting. And also, like, if you want to impress a date next year, just follow the right Twitter accounts and then just, you know, show how smart you are by predicting every draft pick. Because you're going to get all the picks early, and she'll be so enamored with your knowledge of NFL football.
Yeah, you can't do that every – you can't win every hand. But yeah, I mean, you could do well enough to impress, right? You got to dump it, so it's not too suspicious. But sure, round two tonight. Is there anything up there? Would be right on over under on guys and what the Bills do. The Bills have the third pick of the second round.
I have no idea what the Bills are going to do. That's something I have not paid much attention to. I'm going to be completely honest with you. And looking at the board right now. They do have markets up on 33, 34, and 35. So they pick 35th, is that right?
Yes.
So favored to go, I guess favored, I'm using air quotes, Denzel Boston, the wide receiver, is plus 425 to be the first guy taken. Okay, cool. And then Caden McDonald is second. Jermod McCoy is third. Colton Hood is fourth. Those are your top four guys, at least at DraftKings, to go 35th overall.
The first two names have been names we've talked about for the Bills.
At 26, even.
At 26, you know, yeah. Throughout. McCoy, we haven't talked about him at all that I remember because he's injured. Like, he's somebody who could miss the entire season. So who takes him? It's, you know, he could have probably would have been a first-round pick easily without that. Probably not what the Bills do because of that injury and, you know, they're being kind of in the win-now mode. But those other two names... very realistic for Buffalo. I don't know about Boston for San Francisco Bulldog. Getting Evans and still having Pearsall. Ayuk leaves. I don't know if that would be a receiver pick, but maybe. What's new with the White Sox?
They're starting to hit the ball. This Murakami kid is unbelievable. He's like the fastest White Sox rookie ever to 10 home runs, and that's another bet that we talked about on Chicken Dinner. I got some guys who will either text me or DM me every time he homers. That's the Japanese rookie who used to play with Otani overseas. We got him at 100-1 to lead the league in homers.
Wow.
I don't know that it's going to happen, and I'm knocking on wood right here because I don't want to jinx myself. But between him and Montgomery, the shortstop, they're starting to hit the ball. So we'll see. Again, we need 67 wins. But the White Sox, when they go west, and people are starting to tune out now because they're like, why are we talking about the White Sox again? We need 67 wins. That's all we need, and it's going to be a sweat for sure. But usually when the White Sox go west, they go like 1-5, 0-6. They went 4-2 on their West Coast road trip. That like never happens for White Sox fans.
I need the playoffs, and that's where my focus is when it comes to this team. 3.5 out of first in a weak division so far this year. So I'm with you on your Chicago White Sox. Very good,
I'm
Sam.
Hopeful.
I can't wait to hear how Sunday goes. Live it up.
I'll send whatever you need. I'll send some content. I hope it's 3-1 Buffalo after Sunday, and I will be rowdy in the bar right across from the Garden.
All right. See if you can catch up with the Buffalo, the rollerblade people. We've sent some rollerbladers that are running around in mismatched Sabres jerseys causing mayhem on the streets of Boston. So keep an eye out for them.
Will do, sir.
All right.
Find a hat. All right, Sam. Talk to you next Friday.
See you guys.
Let's see. What? Game 5 is Tuesday. Game 6, if necessary, Thursday. So next Friday, we'll know a lot.
Yep. And then a potential Game 7 wouldn't be until next Sunday, I saw.
Okay.
So none of that's going to matter.
I don't mind if they pace themselves with this thing.
They're gonna just wrap this thing up.
We'll talk about the draft some more coming up with Ross Tucker at 4. Sal will join us in the final hour to set up round 2. Paul Hamilton in between Sabres and Bruins. Game 4 is Sunday afternoon. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here at 803-0550. This is WGR.
Sports Radio 550.
Paul and the Sabres enjoying a nice little weekend in New England. 2 days off here between games 3 and 4. There should be a song. There should be a song about that.
Weekend in New England?
Yes.
There's probably 5,000 songs about that.
There's at least one. The Great Man.
Chevy Chase.
Barry Manilow. Want me to sing it?
Sure, you're
no.
Badly now. Yes, actually.
No, they say you can't. You shouldn't try Manilow.
Yeah.
Or Whitney Houston.
Yeah.
You shouldn't. You got to come correct.
All right.
If you're going to try to do those two vocal greats.
Who is the vocalist behind Please Come to Boston?
That'd be Dave Loggins, Bulldog.
Okay, there you go.
Look at me.
I mean, it's.
I happen to know this one.
It's a very forlorn, lonesome sounding song.
I like that song. I like sad songs. My wife hates that song. Please Come to Boston. Dave Loggins, who I believe also is the voice on the Augusta, the Masters song.
Okay.
Remember when we used to play that with words?
Yes.
I think that's also Dave Loggins.
Yes, I think that's right.
All right. Has Paul left?
Paul quit.
Paul Hamilton.
Paul took a hammer and smashed his equipment so he can't talk to us.
You know Weekend in New England, Barry Manilow. Come on, you don't?
I don't, not offhand. I'm sure it's a melody and a song I'll know if I heard it. Maybe if you even sang it. But
I'm close.
I don't know it off. I don't know it by title.
I want to pick up the right part for me. I might do it. I might do it.
Yeah, well, let's talk to Paul for a bit and then we can revisit.
Feeling better, Paul, hopefully.
What's that?
Are you feeling better? You said yesterday how you couldn't really get up. No.
This was a good day to not have much to do, so just kind of hunkering down here. Had found some clam chowder and then hunkering down here.
Did the Sabres have?
Sabres
did
day
they have?
Off.
They had the day off. That's what I was going to say. Okay.
So there was nothing. Yeah, it was just Lindy available, and that's it. And then they'll be back on the ice tomorrow for practice.
What did he say today? Having slept on game 3.
First of all, with Josh Norris, he said it's possible he could practice tomorrow. He said he has improved. He said so he's not ruling him out for practice, but he doesn't know if he will or he won't, so we'll see how that goes. He talked about that he wasn't as vocal about how poorly they played in game 2. Sometimes he might be because he didn't want media and other people like questioning his players relentlessly on what went wrong and everything else. And he wanted to kind of keep that in-house and just go over things with them and kind of keep it measured, you know, and let's not get too excited about this. You know, it's happened. This is what we can do about it to get back to our game, which is exactly what they did. And I mean, that to me, was the Buffalo Sabres we've been seeing since December, you know, for the most part. And, you know, he just wanted to kind of downplay it, and he did downplay it publicly.
Right, but privately, I saw him indicate that, like, you know, we really talked honestly and looked at what we needed to do, and that's a good job by him, I think. I mean, obviously, to correct them in private, but to not let his frustration on Tuesday night and even Wednesday come through at all, really. He seemed very matter-of-fact to me after the game on Tuesday. Like, you know, they got a dose of playoff success, and now they got a dose of playoff adversity, and, like, you know, we're learning as we go kind of thing. And it served them well, because they were as good to me in this game last night all game as they were on Sunday in game one. And it just took them a little less time to find the scoreboard and ultimately get in front before, unlike Sunday when they waited until, like, the final 3 minutes to have a lead.
Yeah, no, honestly, I think they were better. And even, like, as we're watching penalties being taken in the third period, you know, Dahlin goes at 11:27, Thompson goes at 14:13. Sometimes, you know, you get a sense of, I didn't get that at all. I didn't sense at all that this was going to, even though it was a one-goal game at the time, mm-hmm. I didn't think, well, they're in trouble. This is going to be a problem or whatever. And it wasn't. I mean, they killed the penalty. I mean, yes, Lyon had to make a couple of good saves. There was one after the Thompson penalty where Timmins blocked a Pasternak shot, and then Lyon had to make a good save on Pasternak. So, of course, your goaltender is going to have to make some saves when you're shorthanded like that. But it wasn't like Boston was all over them.
No, they even had a great chance themselves, I think, on one of those two. I don't remember which. I think it was the mm-hmm. first one, because I remember it was early enough in the game. Like, just go score a shorthanded goal. And then they almost did.
They almost had a 2-on-0.
Yeah.
McLeod just missed turning it into a 2-on-0.
Yep. Their penalty kill was excellent, especially late there. What did you think of the calls? I thought Dahlin knew exactly what he was doing on his. Like, I didn't think that was an accident. I think he thought, I can hit him and make it look like an accident, and I think he got caught.
Yeah. I mean, they were both calls.
Yep.
I mean, and, you know, this has just been typical NHL officiating in the playoffs. I mean, we could go back and pick out probably over 10 penalties against the Sabres and over 10 penalties against the Bruins that weren't called. I mean, Sturm was whining because the Sabres are getting a piece of his goaltender. And Lindy even said, yeah, all right. He goes, there's probably one time I'm seeing in there that he's probably right. He goes, I can also talk about how Thompson got tripped twice. Mm-hmm. And, like, blatant plays, and he goes, I could complain about that too. He said, so.
He would be if they were down. He would be.
Yes, that might be right. That might be right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, so what? Of course, good job, Sabres. I like that you're getting a piece of their goaltender. I like that you're aggravating him, and that you're aggravating him so much that it's going to be talked about, that Sturm thinks he needs to wake the officials up to it. Or whatever. I mean, that's how you win hockey games, is when you get by, brush them. Get a little piece of them. I mean, Lyon was at it again last night, yakking at them.
It sounds like we just had Paul drop off.
Yep.
Is what I think happened there.
Did I mention yesterday, from watching Philadelphia-Pittsburgh, the move that you saw a few times in that game, and somebody might have gotten called for it finally? But it's like just a spear after the play is over. It's not like obvious, but this, you know, like little poke with the blade of the stick.
Yeah.
There are more ways to test officials who don't want to bog playoff games down with penalties and, you know, get away with it. And that's those shots around the net. What are they going to – they're going to call that? They're going to want to do it once and hope that it, you know – remedies the situation.
Paul, I thought it was pretty interesting that Lindy said, when asked about the Krebs early penalty, which I still can't believe happened, that Lindy just sort of said, well, they warned us, so I wasn't surprised by it at all. Were you, even with the warning?
No, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm on my way down to do my first period interview.
So
I didn't see it.
You didn't see it. Okay.
That's the one drawback of that interview. Anything that happens from 5 minutes, with 5 minutes left of the period on, I usually don't see.
Okay.
I'm on my way downstairs. I'm just going by what Lindy said.
Yeah. Well, Sturm's obviously trying to get, you know, hopefully a call or, you know, more than one with this goaltender business. Paul, the thing I'm noticing here about Lyon that's coming to light through his coming into this game on Tuesday and then, of course, getting the start last night. I mean, I've watched him all year long here with the Sabres. I never knew he was the, like, you want to go guy. I did not catch that all year long watching however many games he played, but he's John and Janot, you know, during game two. Last night he's into it with fans behind the glass. Like, he's nuts. I didn't realize he was nuts. I mean, you know, he's a goalie, and there's a certain amount of insanity that comes with that intrinsically, but I just had no idea that he was that guy.
Yeah, no, it just seems like in the playoffs he's become that guy. I didn't either. Or at least the cameras weren't catching it or whatever.
Right,
but,
right.
Yeah, he's sitting there going, oh, yeah, that's hilarious. That's a good one. Nice job.
Right.
Yeah.
You got me. Yeah, right,
right. he's right into it, though. But look at, you know, how he's playing, too. That,
right.
You know, he's ready to roll. And the only goal that beat him in his two appearances here in the playoffs was Timmins went down to block the shot, which I don't mind because 9 out of 10 times he will block it. Unfortunately, he didn't on that one, and he screened the goaltender, and Lyon never saw it. So that's the only goal that's beaten him in 14 minutes in one game and a full game in this one.
Paul, how about Dahlin? Through half the game last night, any frustrated fan, Sabres can't score. And I thought a few times, you know, he struggled with the puck and went down on one play. Any thoughts on, like, whether he's off his game, in your opinion, or no?
Definitely he's off his game. I mean, but that's, I think the Bruins are a big reason why.
Yeah.
They have developed a game plan where he basically can't move. I mean, they're on him in the defensive zone immediately, and they're not letting him come up ice. So they have targeted him that we're not going to let you beat us. Let Bo Byram beat us, which he's doing.
Yeah.
Let Owen Power beat us, who has 3 assists. But you're not going to. And that's basically, I think, the stance they've taken with him. And, you know, this is his first time in the playoffs, and he needs to grow and he needs to learn from it. I mean, superstar players, which I think, I mean, rightfully so, he's being talked about in the Norris Trophy conversation by a very good defenseman in Chris Pronger. You know,
that's a target on you when that happens.
Yeah, and you got to figure it out. It's like Sturm has made his move. Rasmus Dahlin, it's your move. You're a superstar. How are you going to counter what the Bruins are doing? The one thing I did like about Dahlin is in the start, where the Sabres started so well on the forecheck. I mean, they were in there in a hurry, winning battles, and the Boston defense panicked.
I am not going to panic.
I'm not going to panic either, but we lost Paul again. You know, this is how things go. We're talking to Paul Hamilton. He's in Boston. Sabres with an off day today. We'll practice tomorrow and then play game 4 Sunday afternoon at 2:00. Hoping we get Paul back, because I suspect I know what he'll say about the goaltending situation, but we talked about Lyon, but we haven't asked him what he thinks they will do tomorrow. I would guess his lean will be Lyon, but I don't know it.
He said yesterday, if they win 3-1 and he makes 37 saves, he's going back in. And I said, I think if they win 3-1 and he makes 7 saves,
he's going back in.
And it happened right in between.
Somewhere in between 7 and 37. It's a wide swath.
In a 3-1 game.
Yep, right. Worked out all right then. Sorry, we'll try to get reconnected with Paul here. I wonder what Dahlin, what they can figure out to do. It's not just necessarily to me up to Dahlin to figure it out. The coaching staff should be able to help him. But I wonder what that looks like, you know, because I think he's been, thank God for Byram, Paul, because Byram looks every bit like someone who's done all of this before to me. Like, I've liked him most of the year. He's such a strong skater, and when the puck is on his stick, he's usually very strong with it. But I just feel like he's at another level here in these games, and you know, obviously the goals help a lot. But without him, I think they'd be really sunk.
It's not the first time I've seen him like that. I woke up to Bo Byram his rookie year when he won the cup with Colorado, and I was watching Colorado going, wow, look at Bo Byram. I mean, this kid's a rookie. Look at how well he's playing. I think he's better than Makar in that series. He was like their best defenseman and really, really played well. And here he is again in the playoffs and doing it again. I mean, you got four Sabres. I'm not a huge plus-minus guy, but they're kind of way ahead in the game. I mean, Krebs is +5 and Power, Byram, and Tucker +4. I mean, in three games. So, and then the Bruins have a flock of guys who are -4 and -3. So, I mean, he, and in this case, it is showing how well he's playing, because he didn't score for a long, long time near the end of the season. They got an empty netter, and now he's back finding his way in the slot and that type of thing. What I started to say when we got cut off about Dahlin, in the beginning, where the Sabres really were hard on the forecheck on the Bruins, he was knocking down pucks at the blue line, causing turnovers that the forecheck was causing, and then finding Sabres, and even out at the red line, a couple of times he picked off pucks and got it back the other way quickly. The Sabres got out of the zone, he got it up, and they were right back into the zone. So those are the couple of things that I did like about Dahlin early in the game, but you know, as I mentioned. Sturm has made his move, and now it's time for Dahlin to make his move. As if you're going to be a superstar Norris Trophy type of defenseman, you have to be able to play like one, even when the other team has done things with you and tried to shut you down.
How about Oslin, Paul? When we talked yesterday, I think I said it this way, and I wish I hadn't. Like with Norris coming out and Oslin going in, it's not like you put Oslin in with Norris and you're making an improvement by putting, say, Oslin in for Dunn. Instead, it's Oslin for Norris, and that turned out to be an improvement anyways. I wonder, Paul, if Norris got hurt on that first period headfirst into the boards, he might have played two periods of game two with a head injury or an injury of some kind, if that's where it happened. So like that might, you know, buffer how bad he's been or just not good, if that's a gentler way to put it. Anyway, Oslin was fantastic, Paul.
Yeah, he was. And in Norris's case, he looks like he's been playing hurt the whole series. I mean, it just has not been there for him. And Noah Oslin is a big improvement, what we saw there. And it shouldn't surprise any of us, but this is just a 22-year-old kid. And as Lindy Ruff said, he goes, I very rarely have to correct him. He goes, we're in film session and stuff. He goes, I don't have to tell him, you did that wrong. He goes, it's so rare that he makes a mistake like that you got to say something. He goes, he just knows how to play and what to do. Even Byram said he was surprised he got the puck for that goal. And I asked Oslin, I said, how did you see him? Because it looked like he was behind you. And he goes, no, I saw him the whole way. I don't know how. I don't know if he has radar or what, but he did and put a perfect pass to him. And I have never, guys, I don't know if you have, but I have never seen an empty net goal as good as that one. The first of all, the effort he put in to make sure that wasn't icing, gets down there. There's three Bruins around him. That didn't matter to him. He outworked all of them, and then beat Pasternak, as Lindy said. Well, our scouting reporters went Pasternak's in goals, beat him 5-hole, which I thought was hilarious. And that's what he did. And I'm like, my jaw dropped. It was like, I have never seen an empty net goal that good. And, you know, I understand how good a player Norris can be when he's right. Unfortunately, for the last X amount of years, he hasn't been right at all. And, you know, he's had a couple of spurts where he's been able to get going, but he really hasn't. So, what, you know, I'll fast forward to the off season. What do you do? It looks like you've got a replacement. who's every bit as good or better. And what do you do with him? Your highest paid forward.
I'd like to have them both out there if he does get healthy. Riding with Lyon until he loses, Paul, or maybe not?
I would, yeah. I mean, when Lindy was alternating goaltenders in the regular season, it didn't matter if the goaltender got a shutout or whatever. I mean, Lyon shut out San Jose, and Lukanen was in goal the next game because that's what they were doing. And Lindy kept talking about alternating goaltenders before that game, and I was thinking to myself, that's kind of maybe where we're headed here. He liked that so much, I think maybe he's going to start it again. But how can you? After what he did in that game, as I said, he got only one goal got by him, and it was a screen that he never saw. How can you not come back with him? I don't see how you can decide, well, I want to still alternate goaltenders. I think he's got to be in.
Right, that's where I'm at. I don't think it would be insane if he went back to Lukanen just to, you know, because he talked so much about the rotation, but I'd be hard pressed. I mean, I just think some things in hockey have been true for many years for good reason. Like the goal, he was good. Let's go back to him. So I think I'm expecting Lyon. We'll see what we end up getting. Yeah.
All right. So
no, definitely, I would expect him.
Yep. Practice tomorrow, right?
Yep, they'll be back on the ice tomorrow. I don't know if it'll be able for a long period of time, but. Yeah, as I said, I don't even think the players had a film session. I could be wrong, but I don't think they did. I think just players who needed treatment got treatment, and that's it. And especially with two days in between games, Lindy kind of wanted them to have a day and you know, rest and recover, and then let's get back on the ice on Saturday.
The Red Sox are in Baltimore, unfortunately, for anybody on the trip who might want to get to Fenway. I guess you can still go to Fenway.
Yeah, we just walk around Fenway or whatever. So
there's a bar inside.
They do tours, I think.
Tours. Yeah,
when the team's not at home.
But you've been.
I just had to make sure I got my clam chowder for my favorite place, and I did that for lunch. So that hit the spots, you know, and then that was, as I said, time to get back here and hunker down.
Thanks for fitting us in, Paul. We'll talk to you again, I guess, Monday.
Okay, take care, guys.
All right, keep feeling better, bud. That's Paul Hamilton live in Boston. His appearance on WGR brought to you by Raylax Honda. Raylax, we got this.
Clam chowder, top soup? Rushmore? Mount Soupmore?
Rushmore. Yeah.
Got to be New England.
Yeah, same. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
I bought some today.
Oh, yeah?
Also.
From the same place, Paul?
No.
That wouldn't make any sense.
Unless Paul was in the falls. Quick turnaround.
Could have it shipped. I don't know. All right.
No, I love it. Never made it.
I have.
Have you?
Yeah. I don't make it anymore, but I used to. I used to make pots of it. Seriously, like for a restaurant.
Okay. So, you would know. You're an expert on this.
I had some experience with the cream soups.
It is a soup.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. Like, is chili a soup? It's a stew. Right?
It's more stew than soup, yeah.
What's the difference? The meat? The beans?
Thickness.
The stuff?
Thickness, I think.
Soups can't have stuff?
My wife will make a tortellini soup, like out of like a chicken base, and it's awesome, but once it sits, if it sits for like two, the tortellini expands, and then that it almost becomes like a stew. Because it's just the pasta thickens it up so much.
Maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's fine. It tastes delicious. It's always great. It just the consistency of it changes.
I see.
It changes from soup to almost stew-like.
Makes a lot of sense.
I can't bring myself to call it actually a stew, but it's stew-like.
We'll start to shift toward... Thank you. We'll start to shift toward the draft.
Stew-adjacent.
Round two tonight. Sal Capaccio joins us at 6, and then draft coverage, I guess, resumes, because it's one round in already, tonight at 7. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, 803-0550. On what the Bills did, we haven't had a lot or spent a lot of time. I can't say it wasn't our choice, but haven't spent a lot of time on their night, which ended up being, you know, no picks. But it'll start to heat up shortly after 7. Back after the update, join us at 803-0550 if you like. This is.